My name is Ray Park. You may know me as playing Darth Maul in the Phantom Menace, Clone Wars, and also Solo at Star Wars Story. You're listening to Star Wars Stuff Podcast, The Force is Strong with You All. And remember, Sith Walk.
Hey, this is Dominic Pace, who plays Gecko the Bounty Hunter from The Mandalorian, letting you all know you are listening to the Star Wars Stuff Podcast. Wishing everybody all the best, and may the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you! Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Star Wars Stuff Podcast, where we talk all things Star Wars. My name is Colin.
I'm the other Josh.
I'm also Josh.
I'm Hunter.
I'm Star.
I'm Cap.
I'm Christian.
And we're back! The Bad Batch is back for a final season. Before we get started, we would like to thank everyone that that has been listening to us on Patreon. And I know that some of us are excited to get back into the public eye, so
we're back outside the paywall, guys.
This has been a long time coming. I will say I was really excited to see the kind of loading screen, like, of where it was the Disney Plus logo and it went through all the helmets and then it said Star Wars. It was like,
we're back.
Yeah,
this is so nice.
It was very cool.
We were so spoiled there for a while with a new Star Wars show,
every quarter,
if not sooner. So now it's been weird to go since, so what, it was middle of September when Ahsoka ended?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then also, Star, happy late birthday.
Belated happy birthday, Star.
Thank you. I survived another trip around the sun. Cheers. This was spinning. Yeah. Anyway.
All right. So let's dive into these episodes. Each episode was just under 30 minutes.
They were just about 24 minutes each.
Yeah.
I know this because Hunter texted me to time them as I watched them.
Yes. So I knew how early to set my alarm for this morning to watch them before work.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I tried to budget my time too, and I was still late for class, and
as you should be.
Yes. Look, class is constant. Bad Batch premiere is once.
Yeah, I've only shown up on time for the course once, and it was my exam 3 days ago. So it's not out of the ordinary, but it was still not ideal.
So the first three episodes are Confined, Paths Unknown, and Shadows of Tantus. And these first three episodes are actually very plot-driven.
Yeah.
I feel like this entire season is going to be like that.
Let's go.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't have as much time.
Finally.
Yeah. We've got, 16 episodes?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the last one will debut on May 1st. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
501st day. And my anniversary.
There you go.
And how will I spend that day? I'll spend the entire day in the car because I'm driving to Anaheim.
There you go.
So we open up on the, we don't know the planet, right? Like, we just know that the mountain is called Mount Tantus.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. So we open up in the area and we have a shuttle crash down, and then we just know they're fighting a creature and the stormtroopers don't make it. What creature did we think that was at first? Like, did we think it was a creature that we knew or no?
First, I figured new animal. That, correct. We do know the planet. It's called Wayland.
Okay.
Wait, Wayland?
Wayland. Weyland.
Oh, so it's an Aliens reference. Yeah.
Nice. Probably.
Yeah. And we spend this episode where it seems like it's directly after the season finale of season two, Omega has a lot of hope of escaping, and then she just kind of has like a work schedule, and she's going back and forth and with her sister now, which I think most of us were surprised by that, and we still don't know that much about her. And I know there was a rumor at the end of at the end of season two, that that was actually the mother of Dr. Pershing and and the Mandalorian. So I was very interested to see if we got more details, but we really didn't get.
I want to stop and talk about her for a second because like it feels like there's way more. It's weird because she doesn't seem to have any connection to other clones at all. Like she's moved on from that part of her past. And
she's got a first and last name.
I was just going to say the same thing. Like she has a full name. Like it doesn't, everything about her says I'm not a clone, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No.
I will say it's something that I was sitting there watching and I noticed that the majority of the other scientists we saw that were not droids all looked a lot like.
I know that too.
But all a little different, like different hairstyles to some extent, but they were all very like, it's the same height, it's the same hair color, it's the same build, all in the same kind of glasses and uniform.
And I don't
kind of like, oh, is there a connection between her and the rest of them?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe they just cloned their whole staff, you know? So they didn't have to, like, they have control over everybody and didn't want to deal with someone leaking information.
Saves on HR.
She also brought up that at some point, I don't know if, do we ever get it confirmed if she has the same accelerated aging as regular clones?
We know next to nothing about her.
We don't really know anything about her.
We know she has glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
likely that she has an accelerated aging, but at some point she left Kamino and Hemlock took her under her.
Very do we know that she left Kamino though, or could he have taken her away from Kamino?
If Hemlock takes her away from Kamino, she's still leaving Kamino.
Yeah, okay. I see. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I think the better question is along the lines of that accelerated aging question is if she's a sister to Omega and we know Omega is genetically tied to all the other clones, then Omega is not an anomaly because of her gender.
I think, and I'm sure we'll get to this, it seems obviously, like Omega is an anomaly for other reasons.
Yes, for sure.
And that's kind of confirmed in the last episode, which a lot of had suspicions.
Finally.
Some people really weren't. Yeah, some people were kind of hoping that I wouldn't go down that path, but
no, I don't think this means at all that she is force sensitive.
I agree with Hunter.
It 100% does not mean it is at all. All they are checking is that the M count remains the same and there's no degradation from the initial genetic sample.
I don't think so, simply because you could be right, but it's Star Wars and every Star Wars show has a, you know, force sensitive somebody, right?
Yeah.
And so you know, it's not that I would be fine if she wasn't force sensitive. In fact, I think that'd be pretty cool, but knowing that it's Star Wars, I think she would be. We've seen her do a bunch of stuff, like be able to randomly shoot stuff and hit it, and like in the first season, I don't remember what it was she did, but she used
knows.
Back to episode one.
Okay.
Yes, we will get to that. And like
I was going to say, are we skipping around and talking about everything?
Yeah. Okay. Apparently,
and we will.
So we then cut to the scene of where we've got Omega taking care of the creatures called Lurka, and it's like a small wolf rat type. I mean, it's not like the howlers from Ahsoka, but they look like the Josh, help me out. It's the creatures that the Tusken Raiders have, but they
massive.
Yes, they kind of look like those, but they have like a lump on their back. And
they're bigger and have a horn crest thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very pug like noses.
Yes. And then
Star Wars. We should be allowed dogs in Star Wars by now.
They basically have dogs.
Well, actually, we do see our like really our first dog that actually looks like a real dog and Tales of the Jedi. It's that first episode of where
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Count Dooku and Qui-Gon Jinn are going to that village, and we actually do see like
there's that Dooku hound kind of thing.
But we then also see this droid, which has I don't think it's the same type of droid that we see in Rogue One, where it's kind of got like a it has a cylinder head, but basically it's that same head, but it's on this built droid. And the first thing I thought was, ooh, I guarantee that Hunter is going to be like, oh, that's cool, and pause it.
Cool droid. I think it's, you look at the design choices for the body, I think it's obviously meant to seem like it's a previous iteration of the K2 series.
Except for it being a K9.
Well, but like, it's a, you know what I mean.
I know, but like, the thing for me that I loved was that it was K9 and its job.
Yeah,
was
to, or I guess I should just say K series. I don't.
Yeah.
So it's supposed to look like an earlier iteration of that. And so much in this, this time period is supposed to look like an earlier version of Empire.
I mean, it's very Fallen Order. It pulls out a stun baton and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did a really good job mixing the designs in Tantus between like kind of Kaminoan designs and then Empire designs. Like, it was really fun to see like the data pads, the droids, the helmets. You were like, oh, I can totally see it going Empire, but not like fully committed yet. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I felt like, and maybe this sounds like a Josh thing to notice, but a lot of the sounds that they used for the machinery, for machinery mostly, were kind of imperial sounding.
Yeah, they had that industrial feel. I don't know how to describe it well, but like Republic era sounds are often, they seem more fine tuned.
Yes.
More like a whirring engine versus a mechanical trudging, like a walker or something.
We also had first we opened with a crashing ship, and we saw Imperial gunner helmets. Saw those guys on a very Imperial console with giant red and white buttons. That was really cool. Really cool to see the Imperial gunners get their stuff before anyone else.
Yes.
Yeah. And we kind of then have her go see Crosshair in his cell, and it seems like Crosshair has kind of lost hope. He's like if it happens where I escape at this point, I really don't care. And then we see his hand kind of twitch, which do we think that's because of the blood that is being drawn out of him, or do you think it's because for some clones really weren't meant to outlast the war. So do you think it's like a acceleration of his, like, of where, like, you know, maybe his body's starting to shut down, or
there's a line in the episode, it's either this, I think it's in this episode, where they talk about some of the clones being less receptive to indoctrination and like brainwashing than other clones. And knowing what we know about the Empire and how they treat people they're trying to indoctrinate, I wouldn't be surprised if the indoctrination process is very much similar to the like torture Han went through.
Yeah.
And we know that Han in the Empire, after he's tortured and gets thrown in that cell, he's twitching like crazy. So this is the similar kind of, like, you know, he's a trained soldier supposed to be capable of withstanding torture.
But
it's indoctrination going wrong. I wouldn't be surprised if it's manifesting itself in like a twitch.
Yeah. He also, at this point in like the third season, has a lot of specifically head injuries and brain damage from the ship, from being roasted, from being hit in the head. So like, even just like, even compounding that with also then being tortured, it could just be, I mean, he's been through a lot, you know, so it could be both of those things combined, especially because in season two, we watched him just like grab his head all the time. Yeah. Like he would, like stuff would happen. He'd like grab his head. We even saw him do it in this first episode too, at one point. So yeah.
Maybe this is a good time to talk about it. StarWars.com put out an article before this season came out, and I believe they referenced Crosshair's chip and whether or not it's actually there. Did you guys read that?
I
remember hearing discussion about it.
I'm going to bring up the actual article and read the quote, so I don't misquote it, but just to discuss while I'm looking it up, what are your opinions on it? On whether or not he has a chip.
Yeah. Well, because we know that he told the actual crew and at the end of season one of where, like, I removed my chip a long time ago. But in the back of my head, I was like, that's sus. I really don't believe you. Yeah. I think it's still there. I think that was your way of being like, oh yeah, guys, I'm normal. This is normal. Like, come and join me. Like,
I think that was a very intentional dig at them being like, oh, you guys think you're special because you've come to this conclusion without a chip in my head. Yeah. I don't have a chip in my head, and this is the right call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas I think if he doesn't, I think if he has a chip in his head, it's not his original chip.
Yeah.
I think it's something new that they're maybe trying to override. Because like those new ex-assassin class character clones.
Yeah.
Those ones are way more fanatical than we're seeing a lot of other clones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh.
So I think it's a case that they might be having an entirely separate, like, full personality override.
Right. Yeah. Well, okay, so, I mean, bringing that up from season one, there's a whole scene where they're talking about enhancing Crosshair's chip.
Yes.
And that could be a tie back to the X-Clone class, where maybe that's something they did, and they enhanced people's chips, and that's what made them maybe into the X-class clones that we're seeing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe they partially did it with Crosshair. They tried to do it with Crosshair, but we do know that like he has had his chip, even if it is removed or not removed, it was, you know, screwed with a bit.
Yeah, it's been messed with,
for sure.
Yeah. And then while we're waiting for Hunter to find the article,
trying. They have six articles out for the Bad Batch right now.
Oh wow! Yeah, so
I did a quick search. I didn't see anything about chip mentioned in any of.
So we then cut to where like time has kind of passed, and it looks like Omega is older. Her hair is longer.
They did that so well.
They did.
And we then kind of get the same scene that we saw before of where Omega and Crosshair are passing each other in the hallway, but this time Omega doesn't even give Crosshair a look. So to me, it's just like she is now in that kind of normal state of how she was on Kamino. It kind of looks like she's getting back into the old groove of things because she's working directly with Nala Se, and then you'd also see that something's wrong with Nala Se, like as she's walking and stuff, because they normally have good posture, but it looks like she's kind of getting worn down. She's probably working all the time. She's probably exhausted.
She's probably depressed.
So we are just kind of seeing everything kind of get into the groove of things. And then we also learned that that Nala Se has been throwing away the blood samples that that they've been getting taken from Omega. And if they found out, something bad would happen, which we'll get to episode 3, which it looks like we have a lot to talk about that. I was really intrigued by Project Necromancer because basically are trying to justify that line from Rise of Skywalker, which is somehow Palpatine returned.
I've come around to it.
That line still makes me so angry just because as a result, every piece of Star Wars media we've gotten since has been like, how do we explain
He fell down a shaft, and then the Death Star exploded. The entire thing went nuclear.
That's because what we got to see is at the bottom of the shaft is actually a localized light speed point, and he falls through it.
I don't think we have any reason to believe it's the same body.
No, we don't. No. It's likely a clone body, and
I think that's a cool thing, and I like being. I'm okay with that line now because we're explaining a lot of what comes out of it, and that's fine. They've made so much effort to try and to explain it, and I think that now the story is catching up to the place where I'm like, I'm actually enjoying where this is going. Having the combination through science and religion put together for this whole necromancy project is really interesting to me. I think what would be cool is if they ever get to the point where they can show how his force essence is repaired or put inside this body. When we get to that point, I think that's it's gone full circle and that'll be the proper end to it. But I think that combination of the two is going to be very cool on screen.
I definitely agree. And we will definitely, again, all that will fall into the third episode because we see more like Sith stuff and we get a cameo from one of our favorite Sith lords. But we get to the part where Omega is really leaning towards on her heartstrings and she ends up freeing one of the Lurka. And how did we feel about that? Like, she's like still herself, but she's also kind of hiding that away in a way. How did we feel about her character development in this episode?
It makes sense. It makes sense that after 2 months, because they say it's two cycles she's been gone, and looking at the number of hashes she's made, it equates to a little more than 60, I think, hashes total. And it makes sense that like after like the first cut, like the first week basically working there, she's going to be like, okay, I need to play it safe and to play it cool. I need to keep my own identity still kind of like under the water, under the surface, because if I act out too much, then Emery is going to reach out and like restrict me even further. Or like the main guy, what's his name? Hey, something.
Michael Jackson.
Yeah, Michael Jackson.
Because he's still doing the hand thing.
Hemlock.
But like we've seen that he is not afraid to be like, oh, you have a weak spot. I'm just gonna torture the weak spot until you break.
Yeah.
I think from a storytelling perspective, this little arc of Omega's trying to feed this one creature and then healing its wound and then eventually releasing it. All three of these episodes did honestly a quite solid job of having an individual story arc, an individual thing, however small, especially with this first one, while still having a lot of time for having character moments, showing us new areas and showing us just little bits. Like, it's not filling in all the gaps. It's still letting your imagination fill a lot of it, which helps so much in storytelling. These three episodes, I think, were some of the most well-rounded and individualistic episodes that we've had in a row, especially. Last season, I think of the main Crosshair episodes, the one with Cody, the one with Mayday. Those are some of the most individualistic episodes where I was like, I could actually just watch this one episode and feel like it was a holistic story that still contributed. And all three of these, I think, did that extremely well.
Yeah. And I think overall, especially the main point of the first episode was one to show the monotony of the time that Omega is dealing with. Because it's the same routine, in and out, every day. It's going to be the same. We get that, you see her go through, like, she's collecting a little bit of straw from the kennel every time she's down there. She makes her own Tuca doll, which was, kind of heartbreaking that she made her own Lula.
Yeah, that was very sad.
Yeah.
They learned so much on how to show these characters and how they've lost and what happens when they are apart. I'm reminded of Mandalorian, or sorry, Mandalorian Season 2.5, Book of Boba Fett, where if you rewatch that series, Din is without Grogu for, what, 30 minutes?
Yeah, maybe.
Like, not even an entire episode. Maybe. It doesn't feel like they were ever truly separated unless you remember what it was like to actually watch those episodes when they released. We felt that loss.
Yeah.
In between seasons. But if you rewatch it, you still don't feel that loss. In this case, even if it's just these two episodes alone, you get to see what the Batch react to this. Yep. You get to see these characters alone. You see the monotony Omega's in.
Yeah.
And I think it really helps, especially on rewatchability.
Yeah. To
make this story and these characters feel much more grounded and have the story feel much more impactful.
Yes. Yeah.
And we kind of get to the end of that episode of where Hemlock is saying, like, I mean, you're going nowhere, you are trapped, like, there is nothing that is going to change with your life right now. And we ends with a shot of where Omega's kind of staring out the window, and you hear the sound of the lurker that escaped. And then the screen goes black, and you're just like, I want more. And then you're like, oh, well, guess what? Here's two more episodes.
So, Yeah. These episodes, every single one of them at the end, I was like, wait, no, that can't be the end. Like, there has to be more. And there have been some episodes where I love all of them, but some of them I'm like, oh, okay, all right. But these ones are great.
Yeah. There's some episodes that end with a kind of like, oh, great, it's done. And I remember like talking to some people in the audience after we had like left the screening, and a lot of people were kind of like, oh, that first episode felt very slow, but like slow in a way that it was like building tension.
Yeah, it should have.
I'm like, good. It's supposed to be.
Well, and it's super artful. I didn't know where to put this comment, but the sort of bookends of the way that they show Omega going through this monotonous routine for this episode, it's really an artful episode. So I thought it was 10 out of 10. That was good.
Yeah. The Empire unable to have good plumbing.
Yeah. Classic. Plumbing's hard. Give him a break.
Yeah.
I like
the Empire. No.
When the commandos came in to check her room, like one of them bent down and looked at the sink.
Did you mess with this? Are you the reason why it's dripping?
He walked in, he's like, Jesus, you live with this? Even mine doesn't do that.
So we then get into episode two, which is called Paths Unknown. And we open up on this structure, which looks very similar to, like, to me, it really reminds me of like a Norwegian structure. It's it's got like this kind of
the stave church in
and we find out that that it belongs to the Duran's family, and it was this character that was in season one of where he was trying to move up in the underworld, and we see him again here for a couple of minutes, and basically we then kind of get this Flash Gordon type vibe of where they have the ray shield and the trapdoor thing, and it's kind of like this old medieval times of where, like, ooh, if I don't like what you're saying, I'm gonna press the button on the trap door, which is also kind of like over at Jabba's palace as well. Yeah. But it's just like, oh, okay, interesting. And they were doing it with a ray shield, so I thought that was a nice touch.
Also, how cool did the Deveronian Enforcer costume look?
I was just gonna say the same. It was, I really like all that kind of stuff that they throw into episodes, which sometimes I end up really liking filler episodes because you see a bunch of cool stuff like this. And it was cool that they just kind of snuck some fun world building in that was like, it didn't have to be filler. It just worked for the episode.
Yeah.
And it wasn't an intense amount of it too. We got an establishing shot. We got a little bit of character work.
Yeah.
We had like a fun little opening. It was a great introduction and a great, just like little bit of hints of like, hey, this world is here. This is some of the stuff that goes on in the galaxy.
Just
there's
more.
Exactly.
I also really liked getting the introduction of Hunter and Wrecker as mercenaries, here they come.
Yes. Yeah.
And having, instead of just being like, oh, like you get to see them as from someone else's perspective of, here's mercenaries. There's just two of them. Their armor looks beat to hell.
Yeah.
Oh, and having them introduced into the world of that kind of underworld situation as mercenaries, you could just see nobody bats an eye. Like it's a very, I don't know, it's really cool to see how they fit into that world.
Yeah.
Because like at one point, you know, the batch didn't really have a spot, and now you just see, I mean, there's just two of them left and they seem to just slide in perfectly.
Yep.
Yes. That's pretty cool. And their armor is banged up.
Wrecker is.
Their armor has gone through hell since the last time that we saw them. And that was like the first thing that really caught my eye. I was like, wow, like they're not really taking care of their armor anymore. Yeah. I think they're really distracted on their mission to like save an Omega. So they're not keeping up with everything. And I think if you look close over at the Marauder at their ship too, you can also see they really haven't been keeping up with the with the maintenance there. And that might be because unfortunately Tech is gone, so and Tech did a lot of that work on the ship too, so that also shows how big of an impact that Tech had in their group and and their brotherhood. But so we then have Hunter and Wrecker kind of push this pike forward, and this is the pike that actually cut off the horn of Duran and season one, and then he doesn't get dropped in the pit, so it seems like he's gonna have a more worse fate because of this pike, like kind of embarrassed the family. So I mean, they were kind of tortured. So and then we then discovered that Duran's family has secret information of where the base is. Did we actually think it was gonna be the same base of where Omega was, or did you guys think it was gonna be a different location?
Too easy. I also have like just a question too, because they were at Mount Tantus before.
Yes.
Like, do they not have that tracked in their ship's navi computer?
So here's my thing about that is I think they didn't realize.
Yeah.
I mean,
they're gonna show back up and they're gonna be like, "Yo, we spent 4 months looking for Omega, and we knew
she's here."
Wait, that's bad, right?
Because Hunter was captured,
right?
Because
to go get Gregor.
Right.
So they don't know where it is.
But guys, there was a human Poe commando presence. The first appearance of TKs. Should we ever double check that location and see what the
hell? Right, that's like
Peck was the smart one. He's not there anymore. He like he was the one that would have suggested that.
Right.
The collective IQ of that ship dropped to like I could count it on my hands.
But that was just an interesting thing. And like, I get that they weren't there. I forget if they actually saw Hemlock at all or would have any reason to know that he was there.
No, we didn't have Hemlock till season two.
Did he not show up at the end of
He's at the very end of season one.
No, he walked in at the end.
Yeah.
But it was like the last scene.
I remember because we all kind of went, oh, who's this clown?
His first appearance was Metamorphosis in season two.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I was going to say he was not just in the last episode because he was there at the meeting where there was Director Krennic and those other officers, which was like the second to last episode. And then he was in the episode before that because of Crosshair was there and stuff like that. So he definitely had like a presence like throughout the season. It wasn't just that one episode.
But it's still one of those things where it's like we know that this is very high up in Imperial new developments, and in an initiation, the first that you check what you already know, you know, and they're, I don't know, it's interesting. We need 16 episodes, and we're almost a quarter of the way through already.
Yeah, and maybe if they established, and I guess like we assume and we know that there's tons of other Imperial bases, so it's like we have no idea which one, you know, she's at, but still, yeah, you would think they'd check it. That's interesting, Hunter. I had not thought of that.
Yeah, and maybe they're actually going to do what Josh just said, they're going to get there and be like, hey, wait a minute.
Wait a dang minute.
Yeah, we've been here before.
If they don't, I'd be honest. I feel like even if they play it off comedically, that'd be great. I think if they don't mention it, they're just asking to get memed.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, it is entirely possible that that is something they are intentionally doing because it creates the discourse.
Sure.
And also might be a they forgot that they've done it before.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and with how rushed, you know, I feel like going from season 2 to season 3 has been, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know anything about the writing process of this, but I don't know if there was like a potential for another season in here at some point that has gotten cut. You guys probably know more than me, but you know, maybe there was something in there that would make that make more sense.
I know it was pitched as 3 seasons and they were given one season, and then the second 2 were based off the success of season 1.
Yeah, okay, well.
Either way.
I know this because that's what we were told.
Okay.
So they go... They go to fight the flood
in this episode?
Yes. That is exactly what we thought. We were like, hang on.
We literally about died. We were like, it's the flood.
Like, we not only get the disgusting sentient vines, we then get flood spores. We get popcorn that they shoot.
Yes.
Then jumps towards their faces.
Yes, the same way.
The same. It was the same view. Well,
So I would love to point out the fact that 6 of us know what's going on.
Yes.
Hunter down below is making a
face. I was just going to say this because to me, I was like, oh, it's an alien reference.
No.
I mean, it's the same.
It's both.
Alien reference inherently, but it's so him.
No, but to me, who doesn't have that background, it just felt like Alien.
Because we got the flood, and we also got a halo ring in Book of Boba Fett.
Yeah. That's right.
If we're not careful, this podcast is going to become the Halo stuff podcast.
A little bit of crossover, which is very interesting. But so good. And did Daniel Logan return?
Yes, he did. He voiced all of them.
I thought it was just the one.
I thought he did all of them at first too.
Oh,
because they all sound super, super similar. I thought they just like tone shifted his voice or something for the other two.
I don't know.
I thought he just did.
Yes, because of that one main clone that kind of seems like the leader of the two.
Definitely
sounded like Daniel Logan. Yes. But the thing that I wanted to talk to you yesterday about, Hunter, about that clip I was telling you about was, if you listen to it of where the two clone cadets are walking, that doesn't sound like anything like Daniel Logan, in my opinion. So, so I was like, oh, did they just not have Daniel Logan come back? But then you hear Daniel Logan's voice and a different clone cadet. So I was like, interesting that they didn't just do what they've always done, where they've had one person voice all the clones.
Right.
So I thought that was
probably
a really
just
interesting
little, some
choice.
Little cameo by someone.
No, they had the kid from Deadpool 2.
Oh, wait. Oh, my God. Oh, yes.
Okay.
Russell, baby.
That was him?
Julian Denson. He voiced Deke.
Okay.
No way.
Daniel
That's
Logan.
Awesome.
More Kiwis. That's fine.
That's, wow.
Well, that would be accurate.
I mean, there's
things.
Cool.
Yeah. No, he voiced both of the other young clones. He voiced
Oh, did Deke he? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so only Mox, the leader young cadet, was voiced by Daniel Logan.
Okay. Yeah. Huh.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. So we then kind of discover of what happened on the base and where like these clone cadets were on Kamino, and then they got transported off. We probably saw them at the end of season 1 of where they were evacuating all of them. But basically, they survived when a lot of others didn't, and they've been stranded on that planet since then, in this jungle planet. And they're telling Hunter and Wrecker, like, there's no really real way to figure out of what you got to do for your mission. It's a lost cause. But Hunter and Wrecker, like, nah, we like have to see this through. So they end up going back to the ship. They put Gonki on Wrecker's back. And I'm like, all right, cool.
I'm not building it.
Nope.
Come on, Chris.
You should. That'd
be so cool.
I'm not already figuring out how much, you know, fake nylon strapping I need to build.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yep. So they end up going. Yeah. Oh, that would be funny. All right, Hunter, go ahead.
So thanks to our friend Andy, who sent it to me because I couldn't find it on StarWars.com, and he's listening right now. It's the article with the producers who are interviewed for that, who mentioned that his chip has definitively been removed.
What?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I mean, it kind of it makes sense that it has to be. I mean, he disobeys all the
orders. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a little too
innovative. When is the question?
Honestly, I don't think it matters when. Because I think...
Oh, it matters.
I'm not entirely sure it does. Because we see that even... Like, let's say it's not removed until the end of season one, start of season two. That means he still makes all the actions he makes in season two of his own choice. If it's at the start or midway through season one, then we know that he's had his own natural progression. We see with Rex, when Rex still is chipped, that he goes full hardcore mm-hmm. Warrior 66, but he's able to fight it because of his loyalty to himself personally.
Yeah.
All of the Bad Batch clones do not react the same way to their chips. And actually, article on StarWars.com says the same thing, that their chips just don't work the way they're supposed to.
Right. Yes. Right.
Are. Yeah. Because they invested in special clones that didn't invest in special chips.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
That's just bad R&D, guys.
Well, because I think Hauser is a fine example of that, too. Because he was not acting like the other clones when he should have, I think he was kind of treating that normal at some point until he got to the point where he's like, nope, no more. And then he kind of started a rebellion, and then he was with like Rex and them, which I'm expecting to see Hauser again. We then get to the base that has been taking over these plant creatures, which the first thing that popped in my head too was the flood. I was like, this is very similar, but this is not the first plant type creature species in Star Wars, because recently in the High Republic, we actually got this plant too. Species called the Drengir. And it's these plant monsters that have lived for thousands of years, and they kind of have like a Sith affiliation too, and it's very interesting. But these were made in a lab, so this is just Hemlock just doing weird experiment things, and he kind of created this species, which is what it sounds like. And the clone cadets were calling them they were calling them Slithers, right?
Slither vines.
Yeah. So, but yeah, and they go through this base, and there's like this kind of tar on the ground, and I feel like if they fell in, it was game over. And then, I love the whole aspect of it, of where it kind of went back to the episode in season two of where it was like the alien themed episode of where they had the Zillow Beast thing, of having that, and it just kind of felt like you were entering that kind of realm of being like something could be popping up around the corner and that would try to eat you or kill you. So I was like, oh, nice. Yeah. And this season to me feels like it's definitely going to be the darkest out of all the seasons.
It was because we're getting
very curious to see where this is going. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was wondering when I was watching that episode, it made me think of the fact that they were talking about like the Empire's been doing bunches of tests on like everything. And they mentioned this in episode 3 a little bit too, but I won't go into that. But like they talk about, like, we've done tests on all these exotic species and stuff. And it made me remember the episode in Clone Wars where the Separatists are testing out their weapon against the clones. Well, not just the clones, but like all life is going to get destroyed, right?
They're gonna... the Defoe.
Yes. And it made me wonder, where was Hemlock during the Clone Wars?
Right.
So was he working for the Separatists? Was he like... like involved in some of this like crazy research, because you can see the Empire's just taken off with all this scientific research to just make plants evil and all this sort of stuff. And it made me think back to like some of the ties they brought up in the Clone Wars with that.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure at that point he was probably getting his graduate degree from Evil Scientist University.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Hey, he may have been a coworker of mine. Dissertation.
He's a colleague. He's a peer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Somebody tells me you didn't review his journals.
I mean, I couldn't tell you.
So the clone cadets that did not go with the rest of the group were debating on stealing their ship, and they are kind of reminded of they are soldiers, like they are still the good guys, even though they went through this traumatic experience. So we then cut to where they are going through the base, they're getting chased, and then they're kind of stranded, and then you have the other clone cadets come through on the shuttle, and then you have them kind of climbing up, and then you see the Sarlacc type creature. I don't think we know the name of it, but that was a trailer shot from Star Wars Celebration that Josh and I saw that we didn't see in the trailer that was released to the public. So I was curious.
It's good to see that. It's also really funny because it's like we saw a lot from that we saw in those. We saw a lot from those trailers that we saw at Celebration here in just these first three episodes, which makes me go, there's a lot more to see.
I mean, I think we very intentionally went, let's use as much early footage as possible.
Yeah.
There's a couple things.
The only shot that I remember not seeing is of Commander Wolf. So I am waiting for that.
I was just going to say that. I am so pumped for that. I did. Yeah. Maybe this is a good time to bring it up. I was very surprised about how far things progressed in just these first three episodes.
Me too. Yep.
And I mean, we're not to jump ahead, but with Omega and Crosshair escaping at the end of episode 3.
Yeah.
Yep.
I did not expect that to happen so soon. So maybe it ends up they get brought back. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
As we get to the next episode.
Yeah.
And we then kind of end the episode of where they are on the ship and they talk to the clone cadet saying, you know, we have a place where we can keep you safe, and that, and they're referring to the planet of Pabu. So I'm excited.
Hashtag Pabu life.
Yep. So I'm definitely excited to go back there because that place was so peaceful. And I know that wasn't like a mainstream episode, but it was just it was really nice to see the entire crew just kind of chill and relax. And
it's a cool concept. I do want to say too, I thought it was cool that the loyalty of the Bad Batch members to each other, specifically to Omega, is what persuaded the younger clone.
Yeah.
To have a change of heart and actually come back and save them. I think obviously Star Wars in general, one of the central themes is family and like family connection and loyalty to your family.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite parts about the Bad Batch as a group. And I thought it was really cool that was a relevant in universe theme.
Well as being
a show theme.
And the other thing is that we know that the Echo did go back to Rex and they are still fighting the good clone fight. So my guess is eventually we'll see them come back. And this was kind of a prediction from most of our group, I think the last season, of where they will storm Mount Tantus with like a bunch of clones. So hopefully Delta Squad will be there.
Yes, please.
We will see Commander Cody. We will probably see Wolf. We'll see a bunch of clones that we haven't seen in a while. And some clones might not make it.
I want to know what happens to Cody, because we did have the one short little snippet of what's going on with him. And then nothing again. But
yeah.
I just want Rex and Cody to reunite. Yes. I think that's like a big thing.
That would be a good reunion.
Yes.
There was this episode in Star Wars Rebels of where we kind of get like a Clone Wars kind of themed episode of where they fight droids on this one planet. And then Rex gets knocked out and he wakes up and he thinks Cody is there, but it ends up being Kanan. Yeah. So I'm just like, oh my gosh, like I want that reunion.
Yeah.
Because that's been a big thing for most of us fans of the Clone Wars and Revenge of the Sith is what happened to Cody. After those events. And we got a small tease in season two of the Bad Batch. Yep. So I'm ready to actually see what happens because he's not in Rebels.
Nope.
And the Bad Batch aren't really in Rebels, so it's like, what's going on there? But
something didn't make us sad.
Yep, don't do it.
Yes. So we end the episode, and then we go back to the planet Wayland, right? Yeah.
Yeah, Wayland.
Yeah. So we go back there, and then we have news that a special guest is arriving, and I think most of us were like, it's got to be the Emperor. Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
I had small hopes it was Max Rebo, but it's
fine. Oh my god,
yeah, I mean, clearly he's doing his like you know military base tour to you know support.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, yeah. So,
the big fascist that Max Rebo is,
yes, and they then talk about Project Necromancer before the Emperor comes, and this is really cool because we actually got that name drop before, which was near the end of season three of The Mandalorian. Which again, all of this, including stuff in The Mandalorian and Ahsoka and all that stuff, is all leading up to the obsession that Palpatine had with cloning. It all started in the Clone Wars. Some of it happened in the Galactic Civil War, and then it happens and the sequels. So it's like all of this is leading up to that, and it's really showing you of the Emperor's goals, which was to rule the galaxy, and then to, you know, live forever. And this is kind of the stepping stones leading to that.
Yeah. Don't forget also one of the big cloning goals from last season that we had in the episode Metamorphosis, one of the best episodes, because all the commando action, was the Zillow Beast.
Which yeah.
There is a beast on Tantus.
Yep.
We don't know if that's, you know, that could be what they're seeing with Project Necromancer, that we could, it like, because we know the connections are.
Well,
but like, if we get some, part of me has a feeling that we're going to see the Zillow Beast return in this season, and we're going to get the true cap to that storyline.
Yeah, so Hemlock specifically mentions he calls it like the exotics lab or
something.
I would assume that's where the Zillow Beast is. Same with the origins of the Slithervine thing.
Yeah.
So there's probably like a whole little lab where it's basically just trying to make living biological weapons.
Right. Weird things.
Yeah, for sure.
Biological horrors.
Yeah.
Yes. And we then have the Emperor show up. He lands and it reminds me of the scene from Return of the Jedi of where he shows up on the Death Star and he's like, everything is going as I have foreseen. Yeah. And you're just like, oh, okay, all right. So it's I just love that vibe. And and then we have as that's happening and the Emperor's kind of doing his tour of the facility, you have that scene with Omega and Nala Se of where Nala Se is like, listen, if they do test your DNA, something is like
hey,
something
language.
Oh, whoa.
My bad.
Before we move on, I don't want to glaze over the fact of how cool it was to see Royal Guards.
It was very cool.
The way they just basically glide down the ramp and are like, all right, we're going to stand here and look super freaking cool.
Yes.
It is.
Yep. You know what was more respectful of the Emperor was all the commandos going, except for Scorch, going, huds off, boys. No blue lights for the Emperor.
Nobody scanned him.
Yeah, no, it's like
we don't want to know.
As far as he knows, we're all TKs. He's geriatric. Just don't move. And he's just
and this wasn't our first time that we actually saw the Royal Guards and this animation style, because we did see them in the Lost Missions episode in the Clone Wars, of where of where you got Fives, where he actually goes to Coruscant and all that stuff. So
he tries to assassinate the Chancellor.
You're right. Yep. I forgot about that.
That's clearly what he's doing.
Right. Really clearly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, I forgot to mention this back when we were talking about episode one, but one of the things that really caught me was seeing a laboratory environment with a Kaminoan in it, but it was only one Kaminoan.
Yeah.
I really felt how slow her speech and her movements were. Like, yeah. This grace with everything that she did.
Yeah.
I mean, still Iowa bait, but like there's something very special about seeing that dichotomy.
And we then get to the scene of where Omega actually starts to plan the escape, and she like has a plan, but the thing is pretty much it's all
plan is generous. Like,
by the seat of her pants.
Yeah. So she then gets down all the way to the detention block and talks to Crosshair, and then Crosshair is shocked. He's like, "Oh, you have a plan?" And then she's like, "No,
ish,
not really." And then Crosshair is doing this distraction thing of where he's like, "Hey, let me out of the cell. I want your blaster and all that." And then we finally get some action, and then she presses the button, opens the cell, and Crosshair just beats the crap out of them.
Yeah,
we're like, "Let's go, finally!"
Yeah.
And then they are slowly making their way out, and they get to the area of where the creatures were, and they also take down that droid. And I bet Hunter like shed one tear for that scene. But
I wasn't too attached to him yet.
Yeah.
And the only thing you'd seen of him was him being mean to a dog. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Had they just taken out an astromech droid, that'd be worse
than
one of the dogs. Well, there is that scene of where Omega does kick that mouse droid, so that mouse droid doesn't
get that was a great scene. That was hilarious.
That was
so great.
And the mouse droid is like, and then just runs into the door.
I
loved the Crosshair escape scene, partially because I love how, you know, you kind of get the... We all think from the trailer, but he's probably going to rejoin the batch. But I really love how he doesn't sacrifice being an absolute jerk. the way that he talks to her, and he's just like, "Oh, this is ridiculous." I'm like, he's just an absolute jerk. Because I was kind of like, "Oh my gosh, is he going to be like soft now? Is he no? He's just the same jerk
soft. He's
been the whole time." And I'm like, "I love this. Like, please leave us with this jerk of a guy." And I really was happy to see that. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And before they actually escape, you have the doctor, like, she like walks up, and then she's like, "Hey, listen, this is a mistake. Just go back to your cell." And they're like, "Nah, you're crazy. We have to go." And then they end up stunning her, and then they actually end up escaping. And then as this is happening, you've got Hemlock, which is just talking things up with the Emperor. He's like, "Hey, you know, if this works out, is there a way I can get this promotion? Yeah. Like, what's going on here?"
And then,
and then the Emperor's like, "And like, listen, in all due time, just take it easy, relax, but
chill, girl,
but
chill."
right, exactly. And there's also this room that we haven't talked about yet, but it's where the operation is happening, and the floor is all red and like black, and it's got like the Sith line. So there's some Sith magic probably happening with it too, which kind of ties in into like the Emperor, like somehow trying to figure out how to put his soul into a working, like a working body in the future. And we know that he succeeds, and this is what, and we'll definitely talk about it near the end, but to me, it I don't think Omega is going to make it at, like, throughout the season. I think
you're kidding. To,
oh, you didn't see that?
No.
We know Palpatine comes back. That is
no,
not-
I am talking about, I'm talking about Omega. I don't think she's going to make it.
You think she's going to die? Season.
Yes.
Yes.
Bro, no. She is a kid. This is a show for kids. She's.
Oh, that's a fair statement.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. So there's no younglings that ever died in Star Wars.
Okay, shut up. That's really different.
They weren't main characters. All right.
That's true. She does have main character armor.
Yeah, she does.
Well,
I would be less surprised if the whole rest of the batch died and Omega was the only one that survived.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And she's who carries on that legacy.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Right. Everybody else, nobody's safe. So, but okay. She's safe.
The way I look at it is it's very difficult for them to fit it in because we know Palpatine returns. And also, if Omega does survive, let's say she survives and she's on her own. Whatever happens at the end of the season, she's free. Mm-hmm. Omega has no aging factor. Why would she not? She has shown an immense love for her brothers. Why wasn't she with Rex, Wolf, and Gregor on the AT-T?
Because maybe there's more of her clone brothers.
Yeah,
that's possible. That's possible. And maybe clones surviving this siege on Tantus is going to be the next. Oh, and this clone also, this Jedi also survived Order 66.
Right.
That might be the next thing.
Right.
But fitting these characters into the narrative that we currently have laid out, I think is going to be extremely difficult for them to do.
Right.
I also want to touch on the security clearance of Scorch. This dude is able to go into the most important cloning room. Like, Emperor Palpatine, this is the most important thing in the entire empire. And Scorch is just standing there looking at it with his HUD on.
He's probably cracking jokes under his helmet.
And he literally runs to himself.
But we have this character that's been used as eye bait for years now.
Yeah.
And he has the highest clearance I think any clone has ever been given.
Yes.
And the rest of Delta Squad's just
gone. Yeah. And he like runs everything on Tantus too. Like it's like, oh, do this thing. And
then he's head of security by the looks of it.
He's absolutely his head of security. Yes. But that makes me wonder, like, one, like, even if I'm past the point of wanting them to show up, I just want to know where they are. Did they die? Are just they like?
Are separate, they safe? Are they all? Right?
Are there separate security heads for different things?
What if they all come back? During the revolution, and they're like, Scorch, you're a dick. Why are you still here?
that'd be quite. And he's just like hilarious to have them like Thor drop in Wakanda as like the Empire's reinforcements against Captain Fett.
I just wanted
to bring up the fact that within the realm of the most important scientific advancements, or technological advancements in the history of the Empire. We have
Scorch is just there.
Before we move on, what do you guys think is in the tank? Do you think we're gonna see a Snoke or a previous iteration of Snoke or some identifiable thing in that tank?
Yes.
I mean, plot twist, we're going to get a render of a character that looks like Rey.
What if he's trying to clone Anakin?
That would be neat.
Because he was like, Anakin was the most powerful Jedi.
He is the
ultimate apprentice in the palm of his hands. This is like my wild theory that I haven't heard anyone talk about. It's like, throwing darts at a board. He had the most powerful being in the galaxy as his apprentice and then lost him in one battle with Obi-Wan.
So I think he would if he had already figured out cloning for himself, but he's too narcissistic to focus on something other than himself at that age.
That's a very good point, and I think you are very much closer to the truth. However, like spitball is, you know, what's the big surprise
that he's
hiding for us? It'd be neat because that would explain him being like, I want to be able to clone Anakin, get all of his M count into this thing. That's why I want no degradation, is get the most midichlorians ever registered in a living being transferred to this clone, and then I can put my consciousness into a young Anakin Skywalker's M count clone and be the most powerful being in the galaxy.
Checks out for what you want.
Yeah. So we have them escaping in the jungle. We have found the ship that, well, before we get to the ship, we have this troll type creature that's
like a big angry bear.
Yeah.
It's like an owl bear.
That's what I was just going to say. It's like an owl bear. It reminded me of those weird sort of griffin things in the Jedi Crash episode of season one of the Clone Wars.
Oh, yeah. And I thought the design was very interesting. It's got these like bright green eyes, and it's so I don't think we got a name of it yet, but I'm waiting for that. But
weren't they red?
Are they? Because I thought
Disney Plus is down,
But I mean, either way, they have very intimidating eyes. Okay. So we then have, as that's happening, we then have Omega and Crosshair get to the ship. The ship is not in great condition. I don't think it's going to take off. So at this point, I was like, oh, there's no way that they're escaping off planet. There's no way. They'll end up getting captured and getting brought back into the thing. But then a shuttle comes over. You have the stormtroopers come down. You have a clone commander come down, and then you have the dog creatures like come in, and then that just starts chaos.
Yeah.
And then I love how before the fight starts, Crosshair is like, "Did they teach you?"
Plan 72.
Yep.
Right. And I loved that because she was like, "Oh, of course!" Like it was the main thing that they wanted me to learn, like, and she was referring to tech, and then Crosshair kind of rolls his eyes and he's like, yeah, of course he would do that. And then they get into battle and it's like, oh my gosh, this is great. This is fantastic.
Yeah.
And then
Crosshair the fight going on. The lights out of a commando.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
That was cool. Really cool.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was really cool to see, of like more damage in, and this animation style. So the fact that that small detail was pretty cool, of where the helmet gets whacked against the tree and then the lights go out and you're like, oh, okay. But
I really appreciated how like the whole episode, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, Crosshair has like a shaky hand and like, is he going to be able to like do anything anymore? And then he completely cleans the clock of a commando in full armor and you're just like, okay. Yeah.
Just because you're wearing that fancy armor.
He
hits
units.
The commando's head hard enough into a wall to knock out the HUD.
You are more superior than your common brethren.
Yep.
Knocked out with your head against a rock.
Oh man,
concussions still aren't fixed with Rova commando helmet.
And then we have the scene of where the creature that Omega saved in the first episode comes back and returns the favor, and then as that's happening, she ends up taking up the zipline thing up to the ship, takes out the pilot and all that stuff, and I'm like, oh, okay, did not see this coming, and then the fight continues on the ground. Crosshair gets in the ship, the dog creature gets in the ship. And then they start taking off.
Oh, no, I was going to say the best scene was Omega absolutely lighting up those
She was just went for and just it.
Blast them. Yeah. And I was like, oh, my God. Okay, girl.
Yo, Crosshair was still using stun.
Right.
I know.
And he normally does that, too. People. But then she's, like, actually firing on them. I was like, okay.
Well, a shuttle doesn't exactly have a stun setting.
No. Like,
yeah, but she didn't go, like, this
even
is
with
your
the blaster rifle
shot.
Beforehand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rifle beforehand, she's already using, you know, lethal projection. The only last person they stun is Emery.
Yeah.
Yep. Every shot after that is a kill shot.
Yeah.
Right. And they're at that point though where there's not that many clones left. Right. So the only clones left are the Republic Commandos. And you've also seen like how far they've come from season one of where they were trying to stun every clone to at this point, the clones have kind of died out.
Yep.
They're like blood is being drawn. They're being tortured. So at this point, most clones don't exist anymore unless they're special forces.
Yeah.
So they start to escape. They have the V-wings. They end up taking off and they start chasing the shuttle away. I for sure thought it was going to get shot down and they would get brought back to base. But then the DNA test comes on through and we find out that Omega has a strong M count, which we all know means midichlorians.
What they say is that the M count transfer does not degrade.
Yes.
Means whatever initial sample being added to the clone blood is not diluted by Omega's blood.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought that meant
it does not mean she has an M count. What it means is that however the midichlorians normally are red in blood, her blood does not then dilute it the way you would normally think of adding like water to something to dilute.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
However, I still think back to what I was saying at the very beginning here. I still don't think that necessarily means she's not force sensitive because I don't think it's conclusive either way. So there.
But I think it definitely does not prove that she is.
No, it doesn't prove anything. Yeah.
Say that it means she is.
If she is force sensitive, I would say she's force sensitive the way that Han Solo is force sensitive.
Yeah.
Han Solo describes being light, like force sensitive enough
would
to
where it adds she's force sensitive, like.
Like force sensitive to the point where Han is force sensitive because Han is force sensitive enough, according to old George Lucas commentary, to where it affects his ability to be a like unnaturally good shot, unnaturally good pilot, but not enough to make him a Jedi.
Part of the reason I wouldn't want her to be is because it doesn't feel like it's been set up that way.
No,
it doesn't.
Other character. So you think about. Like Anakin in episode one, there are more things that like set it up that make it very obvious that, he is going to be force sensitive. Or you think of other characters where that's where the storyline is trending. There are more explicit hints. And more explicit moments that would be personal to Omega.
Yep.
With her being like, oh, I feel something.
Yeah. Plus, this story is a clone story. It's not a story about Jedi. Yeah. And so I hope it stays with the clones.
Too.
I hope she's not maybe more that's sensitive for
I know
that.
To some people, like Jedi are Star Wars to them.
Yes.
But for me, like Jedi have never been my favorite part of Star Wars.
Same.
That I don't like them at all. They're just not my favorite part of Star Wars. And it would feel like a disservice to the purpose of specifically this season, if not all of the Bad Batch, which is to tell the story of what happened to the clones, where they all go.
Yep.
I think actually it was, I believe it, I was listening to it was a roundtable interview with one of the producers.
Was it Brad?
No. I forget her name. There's a podcast roundtable interview where a bunch of different podcasts were asking questions. And she specifically mentions that as being the purpose of the Bad Batch and like the goal of the show from the outset is to tell what happened to the clones and where
Does
they all go.
Her being force sensitive change anything towards a clone story? It doesn't necessarily mean that she has to be a Jedi.
Yeah.
Just that she is force sensitive and that's what gives a value or like it raises the stakes in the fact that she is force sensitive or her blood is and that is the main reason of why she's such a valued like target.
Not totally, but I think it does to an extent, right?
I think it degrades it a little bit.
Yes, that's a good way to put it.
I think that like as it stands right now, having her just like have a good like
non-degrading midichlorian count. What it does is it puts the shift on cloning is important, which is the story of the clones. Like, why are they here? Yep. Why is, and it's like, ooh, cloning is important rather than force sensitivity is important. I think that keeps the stories in, I don't
know. Yeah, it's on the cloning side.
On the cloning side.
I think you said it perfectly.
I think the whole, a lot of these pieces, it's all like a big, like Lego pieces coming together so that the Emperor gets to this point of cloning, which her being force sensitive doesn't need to happen. Right. However, I still think, like them being like, hey, hers doesn't degrade. Like that's another piece that has to be added and it makes her valuable.
It builds the cloning story, not a she's force sensitive story.
Right. Yeah, and and I think that can be a really valuable piece, even if she is not force sensitive.
Right.
But just of the fact that she is the perfected clone.
She creates the avenue for Palpatine to clone himself.
Right. Yeah.
I do personally think they are, they have set up a lot of things that show that she is in the terms of the same way, like it's to do with animals. It's to do with the emotional side. It's not like actually moving things.
Mm-hmm.
Like Ahsoka showed that hers is far stronger. I understand that. But Sabine's version of force sensitivity was never hinted at, and it was never that strong. So in this, I'm kind of like, I'm that's okay with her being able to.
Yeah, it would be much less shoehorned, but it would still feel like it was.
It's lessening for you guys. Yeah,
yeah.
There is also that she is one of two pure genetic copies of Jango Fett. We know for a fact that she's not an altered clone. From tech, so I'm inclined to trust it more than most.
Yeah,
which that's still interesting to me as to why Omega is female and is still a perfect genetic clone or unaltered, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so, I don't know how science works.
We'll see some of it, and there is always the point of, you know, the Force manifests in what have you, no matter if they're the same or different.
So this news is what kind of stops Hemlock from them shooting the ship down, and then they escape. And I was really surprised. I did not know that was going to happen.
I expected this to be at least the mid-season finale.
No kidding.
Right.
If not later.
Instead, it's the opening act.
Yes.
Well, now we know how Ventress and Cad Bane and Min Nanwan's character.
Yes.
Fennec Shand, we know how those are going to come in. Yeah. So be like, oh, hey, remember how you caught her before?
Right.
Can we get it again? We need to do that again.
Right.
Could be where Boba Fett comes in. Maybe we'll see Bossk.
Yes.
I want to see classic bounty hunters. This is the perfect opportunity to have like Dengar, Orlom, IG-88.
All right, Colin.
Yes,
perfect opportunity, but I'm still bitter that the real perfect opportunity of having them show up with the Boba Fett was just thrown in the garbage.
Yes, I know.
I remember the other Josh and I were like talking about that, how it would have been sick to have Bossk show up and maybe fight alongside with like Black Rosantin and some of the other classic bounty hunters showed up, and then we didn't get that. But I would love to see Black Rosantin show up. That would actually be
love to see any previous bounty hunters that we've seen. It'd be awesome to see him show up here, because pretty much everywhere in Star Wars is a killer design. Cool to see him on screen.
The only weak bounty hunter design we see is a bounty hunter from Clone Wars who gets killed by Orsing.
After they try to kill him, I think of his name, but he was just complaining the entire time. He's like,
yeah,
I don't want to do this job.
Castus or whatever, right?
Yes,
Castus.
Yeah.
I think it's Castus or something.
He's the
only weak bounty hunter design.
So this really kind of sets up the season of being like, there's going to be a lot more action in this one. It's going to be a lot more plot driven. It's definitely going to be more darker. And we have to remind ourselves that this is, we are now getting really close to the prime of where the Empire is. So mm-hmm. So by the end of the show, we'll see that classic TK design, and we'll see the Empire of where maybe this might lead into the events of Andor. Like who knows? Like there's so much that still needs to go on. There may be time jumps. We still have to see Ventress. We still have to see Commander Wolf.
Yeah.
And eventually I think Omega will end up getting captured and she might not make it. I'm just thinking that just because of this has to all tie in going forward into the sequels.
Can I voice another sort of prediction, sort of just fear?
Yeah. Yeah.
Go.
That Wrecker and Hunter are going to figure out where Tantus is before Omega and Crosshair get in contact with them. And then they just go to Tantus and become bait.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's
reverse back
siege Tantus.
So here's my thing about that is I think the place that they're gonna go to right away is probably gonna be Pabu, just because Omega has been there. So she knows that's a safe place to go.
Yeah.
So I think that the next episode we'll see Hunter and Wrecker dropping off the clone cadets, and they'll be like, oh no, there's a ship coming out of hyperspace, and then boom, comes Crosshair and Omega. Mm-hmm. And then we get that reunion right away, and then Echo and Rex show up.
If they're mercenaries now too, maybe they keep an eye on the Bounty Hunters Guild boards. So
working with the crime syndicate.
And in the trailer, we see Crosshair's classic armor with the batch doing the missions. Yeah. And so they have to reconnect at some point.
Yeah.
You know, in that way, it makes you be
someone else in the armor.
I have thought about that. I was like,
we do see a shot of a crashed shuttle with what looks like Crosshair crawling out of it.
Yeah.
In the trailer. Yeah. And that does not look like it's on Pabu.
No.
Episode, like Into the Void. Is that what it's called? If we get a repeat of Into the Void and it's just Crosshair.
Omega
and a dog.
Sunny Day in the Void starting with Omega and Crosshair. Please.
And then D Squad just comes over the horizon.
That really concludes the first three episodes, and it definitely had me excited for the future. I think most of us were not expecting for them to escape. So that really made me excited because I was like, this doesn't have to be drawn out. I was like, wow, this will not be drawn out. Like, we'll be able to dive straight into the action, like all that stuff. So I'm super pumped to see more. And we know Cad Bane shows up. We know Fennec Shand shows up. And we have Commander Wolf and just so much more to look forward to. And the fact that it's going to be mainly plot driven is exciting because just more lore and stuff added into the world of Star Wars of where it makes other things make sense in the future. It's going to be like, oh my gosh, it's all complete, comes full circle.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to go, but I'm going to give this, these first three episodes a rating, from a scale from 1 to 10, I'm going to give it an 8. Just because I thought the first episode was kind of slow at first, but like it makes sense why it needed to be, but I'm giving it 8 out of 10.
I gave Josh? All three a 10.
I gave it all a 10 out of 10.
Okay,
mostly because, you know, we already saw Crosshair just as much in season 3 as we've seen him in season 2. He's been a main character in two events, and so I thought that was a 10 out of 10 then.
I would give it an 8 out of 10, but like not in a bad way. I guess people say numbers and it's like, all right, what's your scale? For me, like a 10 out of 10 at this point is reserved for Siege of Mandalore. And like that's not on this
level,
you know? Like it's still very good. Eight is like my very good, and then 9 is
excellent,
and then 10 is like another class of
Star Wars. To 10 is I've stopped and I'm rewatching it.
I feel like
maybe then it's 10 out of 10 for Bad Batch, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, or it's, you know, for me, it's 10 out of 10 for the potential opening it could have been. So I had no idea it could be this good. And expect it, like, kind of looking at the other season's openings.
Yeah.
And two had a great, you know, sort of beginning, but nothing compared to this. So for what I was expecting, I think it's a 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
I
mean,
I'd say in the comparison of a three-act structure for just your first three episodes, getting that, the full scope of it, I think that this starts the strongest out of any of the seasons for sure.
I would agree.
Yep, agreed.
It's an incredibly strong start. I think episode two, surprisingly, the one without commandos, which I mentioned mainly just as a joke, continuation of the characters, but it was really solid. They had a lot of really good ideas that executed well. They had a lot of great world building. The storytelling was great. The pacing was really solid, especially for episode two. So I think even just relative on a Bad Batch scale, these are pretty solid. I'm tentatively excited and cautiously optimistic for what comes next, because we've seen Bad Batch have great starts and then we're all stoked for the next week and then it stumbles very quickly. And it starts taking its time. So I'm hoping that we continue this quality level of storytelling, and even, you know, episodes that are slower, like episode one, where it's a lot of character time.
Yeah. Because we had 16 episodes. 16 episodes is a lot. So I'm like, where do we hit the filler? And if they can keep this kind of high going, I'm going to be okay. It can be a roller coaster. So I'm hoping that it's not the kind of filler that you're just sitting there, you're like, and I'm waiting for the next episode.
Right.
It's like, I hope it's something interesting. I hope that we get an actual good send off. And the main thing I don't want to happen is to hit the end of the season and it feels rushed, where they like, you're like, they could have spaced this out.
Yeah. That felt a little bit in season two.
Yeah, that's like the final arcs.
You're like, whoa, all right.
In Dee Bradley Baker's interviews that he's been doing recently, there was at least one where he was asked, like, oh, how do you feel about the fact that the show is concluding? And he made a point to say that he was very happy that they were going into this knowing it was the final season.
Yes.
And that it wasn't going to be cut short like Clone Wars was.
Right. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so excited, and I'm glad that we've got this until May. We have new episodes coming out all the way until May, which is so exciting, which means we have time from now until May to get a trailer for Acolyte or Skeleton Crew or Tales of the Jedi, and then have some type of release for that weekend of May 4th. I'm just saying.
It's not confirmed yet, but did you guys like see literally 15 minutes before we started this podcast, Collider apparently broke. It was June 5th for Acolyte.
That's what I heard.
That's good. That's fantastic because of
I don't think it's been shared officially anywhere, but that news story has been great.
Josh and I have been waiting ever since that trailer dropped. We were just like, please.
I'm more excited for Skeleton Crew, but I'll take Acolyte, I guess.
I'm telling you.
Give me live action. I'm very excited for that.
There is this one shot, and I think it's the final shot in the trailer where it's just all the Jedi turn on their lightsabers, and I'm like, let's go. They are not soldiers. They're peacekeepers. They are doing what Jedi are normally supposed to do, and they're not pawns of the Senate. And I'm like, this is great. And if you are fans of the High Republic books and stuff like that, the show is going to be amazing. So I am so excited to have that finally come out. But yeah, no, there are great things on the horizon. You can find us on Twitter /X, actually no longer Threads, or Instagram, because
for the time being.
We'll figure that out. I was so disappointed today, but don't worry, something will fix that. You can also you can support us on Patreon.com, and you can look us up at Star Wars Stuff Podcast 2187. We've been doing Clone Wars commentaries for a while there, and we've been having a lot of fun. So stay tuned for that. You can also find us on Facebook at Star Wars Stuff Group, Star Wars Stuff Podcast page. And you can find all of our lovely friends down below. Oh, yeah. Found it. There we go. It's still there. And J Guy Hunter spelled correctly. Let's go. Yeah.
Nice.
Yes. But yeah, no, guys. This has been a blast. I'm so excited for the future. Because
we're back.
Things are just getting started.
Let's go.
I'm sorry.
So thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week. May the force be with you. Always.